Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call to order this meeting of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. We are today also holding this hearing jointly with the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee. So thank you, Representative Schultz, for that. And also, we have invited members today from the Behavioral Health and Preventive Health Division. So welcome, members. There were quite a few of us on the call today. So first, let me just explain a little bit about how we're going to proceed today, since we have, I think, quite a few members on the call. So since the Health Committee actually has possession of the bill that we have today, the House File 600, we're going to have only the Health Committee members will be actually voting on the bill. But we've invited the members from these other committees who will be welcome to ask questions. But just so everyone is aware at the outset here, because we have so many members, what we'll do when we get to the discussion portion of the hearing is allow members to ask one question, and then we'll go through the list. If there's time, of course, we'll allow members to ask a second question. And the other thing I'd like to mention at the outset is that the bill we'll be hearing, this is the 10th committee stop, I understand. So this bill has been heard. A lot of the aspects of it have been vetted, and we will attempt to keep our discussion to the jurisdiction of the Health Committee, since it is here with us today. So with that, the first order of business would be to take the roll, and this will be only of the Health Committee members. Ms. Niedernhofer.
Chair Liebling.
Present.
Vice Chair Hewitt.
Present.
Lead Schumacher. Schumacher. Representative Ackland.
Ackland present.
Representative Backer.
Backer present.
Representative Bonner. Bonner.
Bonner.
Bonner present. Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Damoth.
Present.
Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Keel.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Munson.
Munson present.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Ryer.
Present.
Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
A quorum is present.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Niedernhofer. And the next order of business would be to approve the minutes from April 9th. 2021. Representative Hewitt, could you move the minutes for us?
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to. I'd so move.
Thank you. So Representative Hewitt moves approval of the minutes of April 9th. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, if the Health Committee members could please unmute. All in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The minutes are approved. All right. So we are here today to hear House File 600, the Omnibus Cannabis Bill. We have Representative Winkler with us today. And because Representative Winkler is not on the committee, the chair will move that House File 600, the sixth engrossment, be re-referred to the Tax Committee. And with that, Representative Winkler, welcome. And we will be glad to hear you introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, especially members, for spending part of your beautiful Saturday afternoon taking up this bill in the midst of a busy legislative session. House File 600 seeks to create a legalized, regulated marketplace for cannabis, to end criminal prohibition of cannabis and all of the racial inequity associated with the criminal prohibition of cannabis, to create a public health and adolescent health approach to discouraging cannabis use amongst those who will not benefit from it, and to create a space for Minnesota adults to legally use a product that can be used with relative safely, certainly as safely or more so than alcohol and cigarettes, to legalize products that we use a public health approach to limiting and regulating their use. House File 600 is the product of 15 town halls across Minnesota, hundreds of hours of work from legislators poring over policy questions, activists' input that has gone back decades. It is the product of state agencies who have weighed in to address concerns and implementation priorities. It is the product of now, I think, it will be the product of 13 committee hearings by the time it gets to the floor of the House. And the reason why so much thought and consideration has gone into this bill is because it is complex. The issues involved are complex, from expungement and criminal justice reform to investing in communities hardest hit by the war on drugs to the medical program and the health benefits and health consequences of cannabis use to the kind of marketplace we want to create and the kind of regulatory structure we want to create. A lot is involved. And the reason we are putting this much time and effort into a cannabis bill is because legalization is coming. 15 states have legalized. Most recently, at the ballot, our close neighbor, South Dakota, approved cannabis with almost as many votes as President Trump received in that election. As a result, neighboring state North Dakota is moving a cannabis legalization bill through its legislature. The bottom line is that legalization is moving across the nation. It is gaining more traction in Congress. And Minnesota has an opportunity to get this right, to identify the concerns and the hazards, to learn from mistakes of other states, to create a bill that reflects the values and concerns of Minnesotans, and to do it in a way that protects the health and protects the safety of more Minnesotans without the failed policy of prohibition, which has criminalized communities, led to adverse consequences for many, and has failed to keep cannabis out of the hands of kids and has made a cannabis marketplace widespread in Minnesota, but has done so in a way that achieves almost no positive regulatory benefits. So that is why the bill is in front of you, Madam Chair. I know that there are a number of testifiers, and I'd like to preserve as much time for committee questions as possible.
Thank you very much, Representative Winkler. I appreciate that overview. So members, we will go to public testimony. So as we are accustomed to in the Health Committee, we'd like to allow the testifiers to get through everything that they have to say. We have quite a list. First, we're going to hear from the supporters, and then we will hear from those with concerns. We're going to ask each testifier to limit themselves to 2 minutes. So testifiers, we will appreciate your limiting your testimony. And usually people are very good about it. I very rarely have to remind anyone. So really appreciate your attention to that. So starting out, the first testifier on my list is Dr. Carter Kazmaier. Dr. Kazmaier, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. Please introduce yourself and let us know who you represent, if anyone, and go ahead with your 2 minutes. Thank you. All right. I don't know. Maybe he's not here. All right, I'll tell you what, why don't we skip him and we'll come back to him if he joins. I understand he was calling in by phone. So the second person on the list is, being told he is here. Dr. Kazmaier, please go ahead. Okay, well, must be technical issues. All right, let's go to Heather Wilmes, if I'm saying that properly.
Hi.
Hello.
Thank you for having me here. So my name is Heather, and I'm a mental health provider at the Aliveness Project in Minneapolis. I provide services to people living with HIV in Minnesota. I've been taught as a provider, I'm supposed to help people gather the tools that they need and able to be successful, and to advocate for their basic rights and to help ensure that they receive the quality of care that they deserve. Cannabis is a tool that many of my clients have in their toolbox, and it helps them be successful. It helps them engage in vocational functioning, it helps them socialize, and it helps with their mental health. My hope is that more people will have access to this tool coming soon here in Minnesota. People living with HIV in Minnesota face potential consequences such as wasting syndrome, chronic pain, depression, sleep disturbance, shame, anxiety, social phobia. Cannabis has and does help them gain weight, get out of bed, be social, and not live with chronic debilitating pain anymore. The current legislation that we have in Minnesota creates barriers for many of my clients to receive the care that they absolutely deserve. The cannabis program in Minnesota is a privilege only a few people can utilize due to the cost and the barriers that are associated that with many face that are associated with getting the approval for the marijuana permit. Currently, the cost of medical marijuana can cost upwards to $500 for people living with HIV in Minnesota. That is because medical insurance does not cover it. And there's not enough medical providers that are willing to sign up to be able to, you know, put people in the program. And that is a huge barrier for care. Many of my clients that are facing poverty and aging have lived with HIV for 30 plus years. And they should be able to make that decision for themselves if they want to use medical cannabis. Those who suffer from pain are more likely to prescribe opiates, and the long-term consequences of opioid use is real, and we know that here in Minnesota. And it costs our state quite a bit of money due to the costs associated with opiate use. As a result of cannabis prohibition, many of the clients who I work with have struggled with all concerns as far as being arrested, incarcerated, being, you know, unable to get housing, and a number of other restrictions. So it is my opinion that cannabis should not only be legal, it should be accessible, and it should be equitable to everyone living in Minnesota, especially people living with HIV. I've seen a positive impact it's had on several of my clients, and I look forward to continuing to see the progress we've made. So thank you for having me here.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next on the list, I don't know if Dr. Kazmaier has been able to unmute at this point. I know he had some technical issues.
Dr. Can you Kazmaier? Hear me now?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
Oh, perfect. Can you see me or can you just hear me?
No, we can just hear you. So please tell us your name and who you're representing.
Sure. I'll go ahead and start. I'm with the proponents. My name is Carter Kazmaier. I'm an emergency physician. I've worked clinically in the Twin Cities' largest referral centers and trauma centers over the last 9 years, and I'm an expert in diagnosing and treating life-threatening conditions and medical emergencies. To be clear, cannabis does not precipitate either. I hope to clarify today whether specifically from a medical perspective, there is sufficient danger posed by the recreational use of cannabis to justify any response on the part of our law enforcement organizations. The simple answer is no, but comprehending that answer is complex, considering our policy towards cannabis is one that since its inception has been informed by alarmism, ignorance of the physiology of cannabinoids, and disregard for the lived experiences of a majority of law-abiding citizens who have either previously used or currently use cannabis. The quickest path to the truth lies with simply listening to your patient. In doing so, one quickly realizes our patients know what all physicians know deep down, that our government dishonestly classifies cannabis as addictive, equally dangerous as heroin and more dangerous than cocaine, methamphetamine, and prescription opiates and sedatives. They know its responsible use doesn't deserve a fine, a court date, jail time, or a criminal record of any sort. They know cannabis used responsibly is a mild intoxicant with no dose capable of causing death or disability. They know that as with alcohol, tobacco, prescription, and over-the-counter medications, high-calorie foods, and social media, there exists the potential for abuse, but with education and moderation, this risk can be easily mitigated. They know we need supportive, actively practicing physicians who embrace education and harm reduction to help those with certain medical and psychiatric conditions make healthy decisions. We don't need this important conversation to be diluted by our overburdened law enforcement personnel and their anxieties. I'm sure they would agree that their talents are better spent preventing and solving serious crimes and advising the public on the finer points of medical toxicology. We have before us a historic opportunity to once and for all build an informed, reasonable, and compassionate cannabis policy in our state. For a minority of you, this may seem to be a tough decision, but let me assure you that it is the obvious one. Please vote to legalize cannabis in the state of Minnesota.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Kasmer. Glad we were able to solve those technical issues.
Thank you.
Okay, Mary Kay Gilbert, welcome to the committee.
Great, thank you, and sorry I'm not here live. I'm representing the nursing perspective. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can, and please do state your name for the record as well.
Okay, I'm Mary Kay Gilbert. I'm representing the nursing perspective. I'm an RN, certified case manager, and a board certified patient advocate. I function in the role as a cannabis nurse consultant. I sit on the Minnesota Medical Cannabis Task Force, and I previously sat on the American Cannabis Nurses Association on the board of directors. As a nurse, coming from one of the most trusted professions, we are leading the charge of bringing education to mainstream medicine, and we recognize the unique challenges that the patients face and the frustration and harm of continued Band-Aid treatment for their healthcare conditions. As many of us know through our previous research, there's three phases of it. One having to do with the specific plants, THC, CBD, THCA, and the variety of other compounds, as well as the endocannabinoid system, which involves a larger number of these physiological processes. It's important for us to know the activity of these and how they interact with the patient's particular condition. As nurses, we have an ethical responsibility to understand and educate each other within not only the medical community, but educating our patients as well, as to how this endocannabinoid system functions and how cannabis can be utilized as a safe and effective medicine. With the publishing of national nursing guidelines for patients using medical marijuana, that's marked an important time in our history. For the first time, state nursing boards now have the much needed guidance from a national level to help structure policy and decisions regarding cannabis-related topics relevant to their particular state. And the individual state boards of nursing who were previously hesitant or waiting for federal approval to address these issues now have structure and support in implementing the changes based on new and nationally recognized nursing guidelines. In addition to the NCSBN, guidelines, specifically the American Cannabis Nurses Association, with over 1,200 members throughout 48 states, and we work closely with the American Nurses Association to bring about additional care guidance. It's time that Minnesota is up to date with these guidelines to provide education to nurses who are taking care of the patients who have to go to the means of the black market for medication in states with this prohibition. This is a plant-based medicine that should be available to all without restriction. We know it's safe, we know it's effective for a wide variety of conditions. In addition to-
Ms. Gilbert, I have to ask you to wrap up.
Okay. I just want to say, in ending, in addition to the ethical responsibility under our nurses' law, we shall approach the patient without judgment regarding their choice of treatment preferences, particularly in managing pain and other distressing symptoms. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Maren Schroeder, welcome.
Hi, Chair Liebling and members of the committee. My name is Maren Schroeder, and I am the Policy Director for Sensible Change Minnesota, an organization that is working primarily to improve access to medical cannabis, prevent accidental drug overdoses, and reduce the harms of our inequitable criminal justice system. I'm also a medical cannabis patient with PTSD, resulting from several years of domestic abuse and stalking. Thank you for letting me speak today. I began my advocacy work in 2014 with our sister organization, Sensible Minnesota. When Minnesota's medical cannabis program first started up, we saw a huge need for patient advocates to help patients navigate the oftentimes complicated process of registering as a patient. In that work, which I led for 2 years, I have spoken with hundreds of patients who are stuck in a system that doesn't work. We know that Minnesota has the highest prices for medical cannabis and the lowest patient enrollment rate of all the established medical cannabis programs in the country. The Health Committee adopted a number of important program modifications in its omnibus bill this year. Those modifications will help a lot, but the reality is patients will be best served with a robust market full of diverse products that can create individualized treatment plans, a market like what is created in HF 600. Opponents to legalization ignore the reality that hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans are already using cannabis, risking contaminated products and even arrest for their use, along with collateral consequences related to housing, employment, education, and other core individual needs that impact their health and wellness. Additionally, our patients are forced to pay exorbitant prices for limited medical cannabis options or compromise their freedom and safety purchasing from the illicit market. In summary, our current laws just don't work. However, medical cannabis does work. According to a 2019 report by the Minnesota Department of Health on PTSD in Minnesota's medical cannabis program, 76% of PTSD patients indicated they receive a high degree of benefit from medical cannabis, and their healthcare providers felt the same. Now it's time Minnesotans leave failed prohibition policies in the past and move the focus to safety and restorative justice. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schroeder. Appreciate you being here today. Next is Stefan Egan.
Good afternoon, committee. Thank you for having me.
Good afternoon. Please introduce yourself and tell us if you're affiliated with anyone, and go ahead.
Yeah. My name is Stefan Egan. I am a medical cannabis patient, and I do work with Sensible Change and Sensible Minnesota. I come to you guys today as both a medical cannabis patient and a medical cannabis and recreational cannabis consultant around the United States. I first moved back to Minnesota after serving 10 years active duty in special operations as the counterintelligence agent for the U.S. Army and Department of Defense. Through that service, I received multiple traumatic brain injuries and was diagnosed with chronic PTSD. The Veteran Affairs Medical Services were prescribing me over 4,500 opiate pills every year for 5 years. The side effects created by those opiates were detrimental, not just to my life, but to the family members and people around me. So much so that I watched my own family members become addicted to these pills and die from overdose and cardiac issues. As a cannabis extraction and processing consultant, I often see lots of illicit cannabis being brought through our labs. And as we test it, we're noticing massive amounts of pesticides, residual nutrient content, heavy metals, and things that are absolutely carcinogenic. This is what over 200,000 Minnesotans are using on a daily basis through the illicit market. Currently, Minnesota has its medical program that uses strictly oils and extraction-based medication. This removes a very essential part of the plant called terpenes, terpenes act as a delivery mechanism for the cannabinoids and help deliver what's called an entourage effect. Through the extraction modalities that are currently being used in Minnesota's medical program, we do not get to benefit from the terpenes that come from the plant naturally. Having medical cannabis utilize smokable flower would allow for full absorption of those terpenes and a full true entourage effect to allow this medicine to work as it should. So in closing, I would just like to thank you for letting me testify and hope that we can move forward and get Minnesota on the same page as the rest of the country.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Egan. We really appreciate you being here with us today. Next on my list is Layla Fatahi. Sorry if I'm saying that one wrong. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Layla Fatahi, and I am the campaign manager for Minnesotans for Responsible Marijuana Regulation, a statewide multipartisan campaign organized by leaders from state and local units of government and a broad range of nonprofit organizations, Minnesota's business community, organized labor, and others. Later today, you are going to hear testimony from those opposed to HF 600, primarily on the basis of several concerns. Concerns about cannabis use by minors, concerns about an increase in the prevalence of cannabis use disorder, concerns about cannabis being a gateway drug, and various other concerns about such risks. The illicit drug market poses greater risks with respect to all of these concerns than does a legal, regulated cannabis market. And arguments to the contrary will fully ignore the fact that cannabis prohibition does not work. It is not successful in repressing the black market. It is not successful in keeping cannabis away from kids. It is not successful in preventing or treating substance use disorders. And in reality, the fact is that cannabis is not the gateway. It is not a gateway drug. It's the illicit market that is the gateway. The vast, vast, vast majority of cannabis consumers don't begin seeking out cocaine or heroin any more than beer drinkers do. But many cannabis consumers end up being exposed to cocaine and heroin and other substances only by virtue of the fact that they're buying their cannabis from the illicit market, from drug dealers who offer them these additional substances. The health and safety of Minnesota is unquestionably better served through the elimination of the illicit cannabis market and its replacement with a licit cannabis market in which products are tested, their composition known, their sale and marketing to children restricted, and their sales revenue used in part to fund risk research and mitigation measures for substance use disorders, roadway safety, and similar things. And this is what HF 600 does. And that's why I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. And so before I go to Mr. Harkis, I just want to note that we're using a little chime for time. So if testifiers hear that little note, they'll know that their 2 minutes have expired. Okay, Marcus Harkis, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Liebling. I'm Marcus Harkis. I'm from North Minneapolis. I'm currently in Miami, Florida. I've studied the unjust history of prohibition and the emerging legal cannabis industry for the past 7 years. I've been a cannabis consumer for 23 years because cannabis makes me feel better. Minnesotans who smoke, vape, or otherwise ingest cannabis do so because it makes us feel better. Cannabis is a healing plant, not a dangerous killer drug. The most dangerous thing about cannabis is getting caught with it because you can lose your freedom, lose your job, lose your housing, and even lose your children. In terms of seeing the full picture of the many intersecting issues related to prohibition and legalization, you'll be hard-pressed to find many other Minnesotans who understand it all as comprehensively as I do. Even so, those of you who plan to vote against this bill will not listen to me because you do not seem to care about our lives. We've witnessed the same disregard in the previous 9 committee hearings for this bill, even though a majority of Republican voters support full legalization. If you don't remember any other words from my testimony today, remember these 5. Prohibition is the problem, not cannabis. prohibition adds no value to public safety. It wastes law enforcement resources. It causes communities to distrust police, and it ruins lives. Cannabis has no lethal dose, but thousands of Minnesotans have their lives harmed by criminalization and disenfranchisement every year. How can prohibitionists be indifferent about this if they care about our health? The law enforcement and treatment industry lobbies fight against legalization not because they care about public health or public safety. They dishonestly defend prohibition because the professions they represent corruptly profit from it. I've never been a criminal, but I grew up being treated like one by police, pulled over for driving and walking while black 50 times, mostly in my teens and 20s. It was excessive police harassment and police violence that gave me PTSD, but cannabis helped me to drop the D. I go so hard for legalization because I've been a victim of prohibition, harassed, searched, disrespected, and assaulted by cops, and discriminated against by employers. There are more prohibition victims than just the people arrested for cannabis. I'm here today representing the hundreds of thousands of adult cannabis consumers of Minnesota who are tired of living in a draconian police state, but most of them are too afraid to tell you that we just want to live free. These unjust laws are bad for the health of our state and the nation. The most salient question in this debate is not if you believe people should consume cannabis, but if you believe Minnesotans should be criminalized for it. Think about that. Full legalization is a no-brainer because it's safer than the senseless criminalization. So please pass House File 600 because prohibition is a problem, not cannabis. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. Is Sabrina Mercedes on? Sabrina Mercedes? Okay, I don't believe she is here or she's not able to unmute. So that concludes the list of proponents. We will now go to those with concerns. And the first person on the list is Ken Winters. Mr. Winters, welcome.
Thank you, Chair and committee members, for this opportunity to provide my views on this bill. I'm Ken Winters, trained as a clinical psychologist and a longstanding addiction researcher. For 25 years, I conducted research while professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Minnesota. I co-founded, along with Judson Bemis, Smart Approaches to Marijuana Minnesota. If one were to follow the science, and there is now considerable research on the effects of cannabis use, I do not see any health justification for commercializing the sale of cannabis to adults. When strong and rigorous studies are conducted, they reveal substantial evidence as to the negative effects of cannabis use on the health and well-being of its users, including elevated risk for addiction, potential damage to the developing brain of adolescents, impaired driving, and increased risk for mental illness. All of these health risks are elevated when high-potency cannabis is used. This is not a trivial issue, given that the proposed bill does not cap THC potency levels. Here is an analogy using alcohol. Imagine that just beer with 3-4% alcohol level was only available and was used for decades. Then further imagine that distillers discovered how to produce hard liquor with 30-40% alcohol level, and it becomes very popular. We all know that taking, for example, 5 shots of hard liquor is significantly more intoxicating and potentially more impairing compared if the person consumed 5 shots of beer. Keep in mind that any historical experience or perspectives of cannabis from decades back is closer to the so-called beer version of cannabis. Nowadays, it's the high-potency cannabis that is the norm. And because high-potency THC has been available for some time, there is now a wealth of research that use of these high-end THC products leads to more negative health consequences compared to THC-light products. There are two specific health issues to highlight. One is cannabis use by teenagers. Based on my reading of the numerous scientific articles on the issue of teenagers and cannabis use, it is my view that teens will most certainly increase their use of cannabis if commercialization were enacted. It is true that among all of the studies on this topic, there are equivocal findings. As an editorial board member of some of the journals that have published these studies, I'm well aware of this literature. Yet every study that has used the most rigorous designs and compared large samples of youth and properly compared cannabis use in states before and after a legitimate passage of time after enacting legalization, the trend data regarding adolescents are consistent. Prevalence rates of cannabis use increases, and the prevalence rates of those with a cannabis use disorder also increases. For example, one of these rigorous studies showed that the rate of cannabis use disorders among adolescents increased by about 20% when states went from no commercialization to enacting commercialization. All of these legalization states, which all have age 21 as the minimum age, claim they're going to address teen use in their legislation. All of them have added more dollars to their states' prevention programs and claimed rigorous monitoring programs of dispensaries.
Yet, Mr. Winters, I have to ask you to wrap up, sorry.
Excellent, thank you. I appreciate this opportunity. In sum, I think the research on the impact of cannabis on health of its users does not favor legalization to commercialize it.
All right, thank you for your testimony today. And let me just say, I don't know if the people with concerns would have heard that we have a little chime that will ring at 2 minutes, and we would ask you to wrap up when you hear that. Next on our list is Eric Hines.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and allowing me to share a perspective. My name is Eric Hines. I reside in Plymouth, Minnesota. I've been married for 35 years before my wife's departure from breast cancer. We raised two children together between Cargill and Land O'Lakes. I've spent 29 years in the corporate world. I'm also a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. Unfortunately, you could be looking at an endangered species in the Black community, not because of marijuana laws, but because of government policy allowing Black families to be reduced from 80% two-parent families to 80% fatherless home in our lifetime. As government officials evaluate making another mistake that destroys our communities, we are beginning a rebuilding process. Having cannabis stores in the neighborhood will make them available to juveniles and young adults. That is a detriment. The science has been proven. Cannabis has an effect on the brain as it continues to develop up to 25 years of age. Currently, 50% of Black students in Minneapolis public schools graduate from high school. If you pass this bill, you go on the record of bringing drugs into a community with the highest crime rate in a decade and the sixth lowest Black high school graduation rate in the country. I conclude by saying, I have no political agenda. I am a registered Democrat. I am advocating for change in the community where fathers began and to step up into their family's life. Passing this bill would take the community backwards. It is eerily reminiscent of the saturation of liquor stores in Black communities across the nation. There are reasons for stiffer penalties for selling illegal drugs in the proximity of public schools. Those reasons hold true for legalizing the sale of cannabis in the heart of the Black community. I respectfully ask you to understand those reasons and know the consequence before you pass this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, looks like Wale Johnson. Wale Johnson, are you here? Okay, another person may be trying to get their technology to work. Why don't we go then to Judson Bemis, and we will come back if Wale Johnson. Oh, I guess that Wale is here. Oh, okay, please proceed. Welcome. But we can't hear you, unfortunately. It does not look like you're muted, but we can't hear you. All right, I'll tell you what, why don't we go to the next person and we will come back to you right after. We'll do that. So let's go to Judson Bemis. Judson Bemis, are you ready?
Chair, my name is Judson Bemis or Tim Bemis, and I chair Smart Approaches to Marijuana Minnesota. I am also a person in long-term recovery, and what that means for me is that I haven't smoked marijuana for 32 years. I mention this because THC is an addictive drug. cannabis use disorder is listed in the DSM-5. It can cause addiction in between 9 and 30% of the people who use it, with greater risk coming from early users and this significantly higher potency drug. There is much we do not know about marijuana. This is significant enough that we urge you not to consider not passing this bill. Here are a few of the things that we do know. One, the NIH and the FDA have not yet shown conclusive evidence that marijuana is an effective medicine. In a study published last week, neither marijuana nor the placebo showed any significant difference in treating PTSD. Marijuana has not been proven effective in treating opioids or pain. In a follow-up study to the one that was done that showed a decrease in overdoses, this one done with more states and more patients, there was actually an increase in opioid overdoses in states that had legalized marijuana. The fact that Democrats have long been against smoking, there is now credible evidence that smoking and vaping THC can lead to severe lung issues. Last, I operate an online drug and alcohol intervention program for teens and their families. The majority of my participants are families whose teens have started using marijuana, also primarily in legalized states. The stories are sad and almost always start out with, my teen was an A student and an athlete, started smoking marijuana, and is now flunking out of school and refuses to stop, saying it is harmless and just a plant. By passing this legislation, we're making guinea pigs out of our teens, and is this something that Minnesota really wants to gamble with? Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. We'll go back to Mr. Johnson now. Welcome.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Good. Okay. Thanks for taking my statement here. My name is Wole Johnson. I'm here as not representing a political party or an interest group. I'm an independent father, a brother, a neighbor, and a citizen. So until recent years, I may have responded to the legalization question with somewhat of an indifference. I have used marijuana in the past, and I concur with the last speaker that it didn't help me any. It wasn't a positive force in my life, but I turned out okay, right? So there's no big deal, right? But once you ask the right questions leading up to this legalization question, it does become a big deal. So question number one, is cannabis dangerous? Yes. I mean, NIH, CDC, the WHO, American Medical Association all have peer-reviewed studies showing that mental and physical health problems come with high regular cannabis use, especially in the newer forms that we have. Question number two, is cannabis addictive? And the answer to that is also yes. It's the number one cause of substance abuse treatment with our youth today is cannabis. So that's the truth. So number three is probably the biggest question. If you answer honestly about the last two questions, why would the state not only allow but encourage a dangerous and addictive substance to be sold in our neighborhoods that are struggling the most with health and addiction problems? And the honest answer to that from this bill is money. This bill claims that this is going to right the wrongs of past racist drug policy through economic development, Black business owners. But by targeting Black and brown people and poor people and creating another potential health problem, how is that progress? Even if it wasn't dangerous, understand you're saying, hey, Black people, we want you to make a lot of money from selling products to people who like to get high, and we're here to help you. It's absolutely insulting, actually, and it's a testament to the fact that you are out of touch with me and with people like me. It's just the case that you just don't know us. We want, leaving aside the medical uses, we're talking about recreational drugs here, and we know we want things just like you want them. We want good schools, not recreational drugs that studies show cause academic declines. We want businesses that provide helpful goods and services, not a product that causes upward of 600,000 emergency room visits per year. as far back as 2011. We want to celebrate and encourage strong families and not celebrate making lots of money because people want to get high. All of this sounds too familiar. And as a Black father, I would just ask that you vote this down. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Appreciate your testimony. Johanna Lester. Johanna
Hello,
Lester.
Good afternoon.
Hello, please proceed.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Johanna Lester. I'm a former research interviewer in public health at the University of Minnesota. I continue to work as an advocate for public health policy. For me, the marijuana issue is also personal. I'm a mom whose son died in a marijuana-related accident. Today, we're still dealing with a pandemic caused by a virus. The vaccines, in order to be approved, went through many clinical trials and testing before being approved as safe enough for administration to the population. The heart medicine some of us take, the cholesterol medicine you take, has gone through clinical trials and been approved as safe to be used for your condition. Would you trust that the voters have sufficient knowledge and expertise to decide whether a heart medicine is safe for you? The food you buy in a store has undergone inspection and met requirements. Marijuana has not. Some of you may be farmers or grew up on a farm. We talk about herd immunity. What about herd safety? Would you give your livestock a treatment which has not been tested for safety? Would you feed your chicken or cows feed that did not meet some guidelines for safety? Would you let voters decide what is safe for your turkeys or pigs to eat? Is it appropriate for the legislature to decide whether a drug is safe for the human population? This bill allows a person to possess up to 10 pounds in their home. 10 pounds would make 9,000 joints. Anything smoked puts toxic chemicals into the lungs. The Surgeon General himself has said that marijuana is not a safe drug. Would you consider it logical to legalize a drug which has no proof of safety for consumption or smoking? This amount also makes it more likely that children and teens will have access, greater access. Smoking currently causes 6 million deaths per year. Legalization will increase the number of smokers and create a public health disaster along with increased healthcare costs. If you don't think marijuana consumption is safe and healthy for your cows and pigs, it's probably not safe for humans either. I urge a no vote on this bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. And then we have Scott Chipman. Scott Chipman. Mr. Chipman, are you on? We're not hearing you. All right, I don't think he is here. So, all right, so with that, that completes our testifiers. And so we are at the point where we are at member discussion, and there is an amendment. Representative Munson, did you want to move your amendment at this time?
Yes, Madam Chair, I can move that this time.
Okay, so Representative Munson is going to move the A21-0194 amendment. Representative Munson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I apologize. I'm actually calling from my car because we had to drive to Rochester this morning for a medical issue. But so I don't have my paperwork with me. But this amendment is Senator Abler's bill for decriminalization that he's been working on in the Senate, and Representative Gomez has this language in the House. I applaud Representative Winkler's efforts on conducting multiple town halls across the state and gathering input. I've also had town halls with people in my district and conducted a pretty exhaustive survey, and I admit there's broad support for some form of decriminalization or legalization, but there's many questions yet unanswered and a lot of concerns from both sides that I think needs addressed to be addressed. Back in 1971, Minnesota mostly decriminalized possession, at least personal use, and set limits on the amount of cannabis that one could be in possession of. But the limits for THC products, so not the flower or the plant material, are extremely low, so much that about 2 gummy bears of possession today is a felony under Minnesota law. And with so many products that Minnesota is producing for the medical cannabis industry, if it was found to be in possession of someone who is not on the registry, can create a felony. Of course, people can go to other states and even soon neighboring states to purchase products for personal use would create a felony in Minnesota. And with that, you lose your right to own guns for the rest of your life. Among many other things, career changing, and lose your housing, and other things. So, I do believe that we could have more conversations in later years on this legislation. But for, you know, hundreds of pages of regulations, taxes, that and all these policies are of concern. And Mr. Johnson, and I want to thank all the testifiers today. But I also want to point out that most of the testifiers testifying in favor of this bill were referencing medical cannabis, which I think has, you know, really high 90 percentile support across the state. That program is effective, we believe, for treating conditions. It's the recreational or personal use that has concerns, especially around law enforcement and employment law, that I think still needs to be addressed. So the amendment that I'm offering today is a delete all amendment that would bring forward the decriminalization and increasing the levels of possession. It's still against the law, but it is not a crime. It's not a felony, and wouldn't remove people's gun rights for the rest of their life to be in possession of 2 gummy bears. So, Madam Chair, that's my amendment, and I'm sure that Representative Winkler will have some comments to it, but I would request a roll call when it comes time to vote. Thank you.
All right. Well, Representative Winkler, I'll let you respond, and then I'll make a comment. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Munson. I do appreciate your bringing the amendment forward. I know that there are, first of all, in none of the public spaces that I have discussed this issue of cannabis has anyone actually said anything positive about the current system that we have in place. There is nobody endorsing what we're currently doing. I've heard lots of support for expanding the medical program to include flower and to find ways to reduce cost. I've heard a lot of concern about the way that our criminal system is operating and in prohibiting cannabis that way. But I've never heard a positive. And so I appreciate that you're bringing forward an approach that would address one of the harms of cannabis, which is the criminal justice approach, because it doesn't work. And the disproportionate application of our criminal laws on cannabis are truly astounding. Minnesotans who are white and Minnesotans who are black use cannabis at just about exactly the same rate. And yet, if you are black, you're anywhere from 4 to 10 times more likely to be arrested for possessing cannabis. So I think decriminalization is a critically important step forward. And if we could accomplish nothing else but reducing penalties and try to lessen the disparate impact of cannabis, I think it would be a step forward. I don't think it's an adequate step forward, because essentially eliminating criminal penalties and providing no regulatory structure whatsoever for the product means that we have no laws governing cannabis whatsoever, or very loose laws that it would be very difficult to apply. So I don't actually think that's a solution. But I do think if we could accomplish at least part of the equation this year by reducing penalties, it would be worthwhile. So I don't support your amendment at this time. I do think it is part of the discussion that we should have this session about how to move forward both in the medical program and on the criminal justice reform side of this issue. But I think there's much more that needs to be done for us to have an effective public policy response to cannabis in Minnesota.
All right. Thank you, Representative Winkler. Well, so even though members, we've allowed some latitude in the discussion of the amendment, I'm going to rule that this amendment is out of order because this is the Health Committee. The amendment itself deals entirely, it is a DE amendment, but it also deals entirely with criminal penalties. And this is not the committee in which criminal penalties really can be decided upon. So it strikes me this would be a floor amendment. It would have been an amendment perhaps for Public Safety Committee, but is out of order in the Health Committee. So thank you. Thank you for that, Representative Munson and Representative Winkler. So with that, we're going to move to any member discussion. So members, if you would like to make a comment, please raise your hand and we'll try to get to you in the order in which hands get raised. I saw Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I didn't necessarily, I should have been slower and let other people go first. But I do appreciate having time to actually now review House File 600 and that now it has gotten to our Health Committee to talk about the health impacts of what would be decriminalization and regulation of cannabis. I appreciate everybody that came out this Saturday to testify for and against, and just know that you were all heard. I take notes, and there's a lot of value in this public discussion. So thank you, the bill author. Thank you, Madam Chair, and all the committees that have converged today to have this discussion. So what I would like to go back to in terms of the testimony, and if I can ask the bill author to start with the answer is, you know, we hear conflicting views about youth use of cannabis, and especially if we compare how it's transpired in states where it's been regulated versus states where it's not regulated right now. Even the testifier today said that there's different research articles that are addressing this and trying to keep track of it. So if we could go back to that discussion of the below 21 use of cannabis and how, and this is what it comes down to for me, is are we better off decriminalizing and regulating cannabis than we are today just trying to prohibit it? And that for me is the important discussion that we're having as we consider the health impacts. So thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to ask that question.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know one of the testifiers discussed the studies that have looked at whether teen or adolescent use of cannabis increases following legalization. But the journal Substance Abuse in 2021, the journal Preventive Medicine Reports 2021, the journal Addictive Behaviors 2021, the journal of Adolescent Health 2020, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey of the United States in 2019 and 2020, the National Survey on Drug Use and Health 2020, the American Journal of Public Health, the National Survey on Youth and Health, and the National Institute on Drug Abuse all have concluded that cannabis use actually is flat or declines after states legalize. The list of studies actually goes on and on from there. But the most recent, including longitudinal and survey data and study of studies, all indicate that it has a marginal to negative effect on legalization as a marginal to negative impact on the amount of youth use of cannabis. So while the concerns are important and are real and are something that we should all be thinking about when it comes to youth use of cannabis. That does not mean that our existing public policy response to that is effective. It isn't. And in fact, it does a lot of harm in other ways. So if we're looking at trade-offs, we are fortunate that in legalizing cannabis, we actually don't create greater youth use, and we get to eliminate one of the big abuses of the current prohibition model, which is discriminate policing.
All right, thank you. All right, let me just give members the picture of who's on the list here. So we have Freiberg, Rasmussen, Grunhagen, Thompson, Hansen, and then Backer. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Winkler, for bringing this bill forward and for your continued willingness to take input on the bill, even as it's moved from committee to committee. You know, a couple months ago, we heard the bill to restrict the sale of flavored tobacco products in the Preventive Health Policy Division. And there were several comments from division members comparing the issue of flavors in the tobacco context as well as the cannabis context. Since then, I know, Representative Winkler, you've added language to the bill, and I draw members' attention to line 20.7 of the bill. The language is very similar to the language in the bill restricting the sale of flavored tobacco products. And in House File 600, it restricts cannabis in a way that will make it less appealing to children, which I think is a goal we all share. And it's also done in a way that will not increase disparities. It prevents the board from approving any cannabis product intended to be smoked or vaped that imparts a flavor other than cannabis, but it does not prohibit the possession, use, or purchase of a flavored cannabis product. And that's becoming sort of the standard in some of these public health measures, because I know there is a serious equity consideration. And that's part of the reason that this bill is coming forward too, because of the disparate way cannabis has been treated in the criminal justice system. So, you know, this is really more than of a comment than a question, but I just wanted to say I was glad to see that flavor language has made it into the bill. I intend to support the bill.
Thank you. Any response, Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Freiberg, we did try to address that. I should also note that the bill contains restrictions on products or marketing that would be designed to appeal to children. So gummy bears, cartoon characters, all that sort of thing is prohibited under the bill. Colorado didn't foresee that being a problem in its early legalization stage, did not have those prohibitions in place and had some problems with kids accidentally consuming those products, and they learned their lesson and ended the sale of that, and those problems have dissipated significantly. So we're addressing that on the front end in our bill.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for DHS. I don't know if we have Mr. Burdick on today or not, but I was looking through the fiscal note, I know that there is money that's set aside for SUD grants, but I was wondering if we had any analysis from DHS that would point to our anticipated increased costs for SUD treatments for public programs, and if any analysis has been done in that, because at least when I was paging through the lengthy fiscal note on this bill, I wasn't able to find that information.
Mr. Burdick or someone from DHS on that can address that?
Good morning, Representative Liebling.
All right, Ms. Bailey, please introduce yourself. Hi. And if you can help us with that question.
Yes, Elise Bailey, Fiscal Policy Director for the Department of Human Services. When we assess the fiscal note, we clearly look at what would be the direct effects of the potential legislation. And so in our fiscal note, we did not attribute any potential secondary effects of changes in use of cannabis to our substance use treatment program. So it would just be the direct effects of the bill.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bailey. And that is pretty consistent with what we always see in this committee as well, that sometimes we complain about it, in fact, because oftentimes when we think we're going to save money, we want DHS to reflect that in reduced utilization of health services, and of course they don't. So that's a frustrating element to the way we budget that can be your friend or your foe, depending on the situation. All right, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, my question is for
Representative Winkler. You know, I think I identify with some of the concerns. My understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Minnesota Chamber has taken a stance against this based on work concerns. The Police and Sheriff's Association both oppose legalizing. The CDC has said, and this is where my question is coming in, according to the CDC, 1 in 10 users will become addicted. Marijuana has long-term impact on attention, memory, learning, and brain function. Smoking marijuana can harm lung tissues and increase the risk of stroke and heart disease. Secondhand marijuana smoke, similar to tobacco, has long been associated with negative health effects on children. And of course, you have the American Academy of Pediatrics saying that cannabis has a demonstrated impact on adolescent brain development. It shows research that during critical development of brain development, it can seriously damage adolescent brain development. So, I mean, when I read all of those concerns by reputable organizations, you know, it's just one more legalization of promotion of addiction and negative consequences to our children. And I know, Representative Winkler, you want to restrict tobacco and the use of tobacco, and yet you want to turn around and legalize this. So it seems a little schizophrenic to me personally. So why do you want to legalize this when we have these reputable organizations from the CDC to the American Academy of Pediatrics with all of these health concerns, both for people using it plus its impact on children?
Representative Winkler. Let me just say too, the chime that we're hearing is not our timing chime. So I don't know where that's coming from. We're not trying to time members' questions. Go ahead, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Grunhagen, it isn't that I don't share the concerns about use of cannabis or the excessive use of cannabis or the use of cannabis by people with certain psychological disorders or adolescents. I share those concerns. The reason to bring the bill forward is because our current laws on cannabis are absolute failures. 2/3 of American adolescents say that cannabis is either easy or very easy to acquire in schools. When they acquire it through schools, we don't know where it's coming from, who's selling it, or what's in it. We have no idea what other things those same sellers could be providing our kids. We have no ability to tax it and use the money that we tax cannabis, and provide additional funding for treatment or for mental health help. We have no ability to create a regulated marketplace. We do, on the other hand, with our current laws, create a police system, a criminal justice system that is deeply discriminatory and ruins lives by its very prohibition, yet with no success whatsoever in preventing those harms that the CDC is talking about. If we had a system in which we saw that prohibition was working to prevent those harms, we probably wouldn't be having this discussion. But prohibition on a product that is widely used, in which most people think it can be used safely if used in moderation, like alcohol, prohibition of those kinds of products cannot work. The demand is there for the product and a supply will be found for it. And cannabis in Minnesota is used by 680,000 people every year. This isn't a fringe thing. This is a normal thing for very many people. So we don't create these conditions. We are supposed to, as policymakers, form a sensible response to the conditions as we find them, not wish that they didn't exist. So I share your concerns, but I can't point to anything in our current laws that prevents any of the harms that you're describing.
All right. Thank you, Representative Winkler. And Representative Moeller has kind of raised a concern about language that was just used. I'm going to just call on her briefly to let her address that point. Representative Moeller?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to say that it's really important that we are careful with the words we use, and calling someone's position schizophrenic, I think, is problematic as someone who has family members with mental health issues. It's just concerning to me that we be more respectful, especially when we're in the health committee. And so I just wanted to point that out. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Representative Moeller. And I'm guilty of that at times as well. So thank you for that reminder. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Chair. Hey, real quick, what I'm trying to get across is these pretextual traffic stops where an officer pulls you over because your taillight is out, or you didn't turn your blinker on, or you know, your tabs are extended. These stops turn into, so oftentimes for young men in my community, oh, I smell marijuana in the car. But these young men could have smoked marijuana in their house. And by the way, marijuana is just as easy accessible as you can buy a high C out of the store in our community. So decriminalizing it would be an idea so that you can regulate, right? But these stops, this is one tool that I know law enforcement, this one bill I know law enforcement doesn't stop, because you take away a tool that they use in these pretextual stops to harass. And oftentimes these cars turn into caskets for young African-American men at these traffic stops. In the case of Philando Castile, who was pulled over and he was racially profiled because of his wide-set nose, but ultimately the officer smelled marijuana in the car. And you saw the outcome of the traffic stop. These traffic stops oftentimes end up in, you know, those disco lights come on behind our cars. These traffic stops are scary situations. So if you could take away a tool, this is something that law enforcement uses to actually hurt Black men in my community. You're not going to stop. And in full disclosure, in the African-American community, I heard somebody from Plymouth talk about, you know, the effects and how it affects the African-American community. But Plymouth is not the African-American community, by the way. So I resent that. You know, these rural areas of Minnesota don't have many African-Americans. And so I resent that. You are not doing anything by criminalizing marijuana because it's going to be accessed. It is being accessed. Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, North Dakota. I mean, come on, Minnesota. Let's be first and not worse. Let's do something for change that makes sense. Marijuana, cannabis is not our problem. Prohibition is our problem. That's our problem, because no one should be killed because they want to smoke a joint by law enforcement. No one should be have a criminal record because they want to smoke a joint. Cigarettes are what's killing people. Liquor is killing people, but you're not criminalizing that. And so, come on, Minnesota.
All right. Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Winkler, did you want to respond at all?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Thompson and one of the testifiers did raise the question of the location of businesses, and it's not exactly on point to this committee, but I did want to clear up a misconception. Local government units can regulate cannabis retailers, cannabis manufacturers, distributors, et cetera, in terms of local zoning and time, place, and manner restrictions. So unless there was some desire to particularly locate businesses in certain neighborhoods by a local municipality, there wouldn't be a reason to expect that to be the case. And in fact, consumer patterns are far more likely to drive where those retail locations are. People want to serve the marketplace.
All right, thank you. So on the list right now, I have Hansen, Backer, Ackland, and Robbins. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Can you guys hear me? I'm using a new headset.
Yes, great. We can.
Thank you. Members, we heard some testimony today that was really concerning to me. As many of you know, I've worked very closely on this issue for a number of years, and I've said a lot about it. But today, I just want to take a second to remind us where prohibition came from. Harry Anslinger propped up this system over 30 years, and he clearly said things like this when he was doing so. Quote, "The primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races," end quote. Another quote, "Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind," end quote. Members, we know that that's not true. And what this is evidence that this system was intentionally propped up to be a racist system. Further evidence of that is when President Nixon launched the war on drugs, his aide, John Ehrlichman, came out in 2016 and said that this was the basis of their philosophy. Quote, "We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war or be Black. But by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and the Blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities," end quote. Members, prohibition is an intentionally racist system that's working exactly as it was designed to work. And it's up to us to rise to the occasion and to make this change, to take a turn and to do better. We know that an unregulated market is not a safe market. We know that prohibition is far more dangerous than cannabis could ever be. We know that a regulated market is a safe market. There's one question that I have for the emergency physician who testified earlier that I hope he can speak to if he's still with us. But the comment that cannabis is sending people to the emergency room was really concerning to me. And I just want to have, you know, somebody who's in the emergency room, if he's still with us, to just comment on that if possible and can address the dangers that we're not seeing bring folks to the emergency room over cannabis. Thank you.
All right. Dr. Kasmer, are you still here with us? I don't think he is. Representative Hansen, sorry
That's
about
okay.
that.
There, he has testified in other committees, and I would encourage members to go back and listen to his testimony and potentially reach out to him. Being that this is the Health Committee, I think it's a really important thing to debunk that information that was shared today. We know that the prohibitionists have long given us some rhetoric that does cause concern, but what they can't provide you is credible research. What they can't provide is information to say that the system of prohibition is working. So I think Representative Winkler, all of the House Democrats and House Republicans who are working with us to bring about a new change and to really make the best model for full legalization in the country. So thank you, Chair Liebling.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hansen. And if Dr. Kasmer, if you're on, I'm reminded you have to press star 6 to unmute if you're on your phone. But I think he is not on any longer. Okay. All right, so the list right now is Backer, Ackland, Robbins, Damuth, and Rasmussen, if we get around to second questions. So, Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is more a statement. I do appreciate this discussion. A lot of people know I volunteer as an EMT for a community. He's been doing it for 25 years. I also have served on a school board. And the people I have talked to on the streets and across other parts is parents do not want this. We have MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, because that's under influence. I've not talked to them, but this is another way for young folks to be under influence. We as government, we as adults are there to protect the children. Kids will get this much easier. I understand that people can get it easier, but when you legalize it, the illegal market of it, which is what we have right now, not talking about if it's criminalized or not, but it is going, they're not going to go away. It's just going to lower the cost of the product, and that means kids will get it more. We had a testifier who talked about how an A student went from an A student down because this does affect their development of their brains. As an EMT, I have picked up folks in the ditches that is under the influence of both drugs and alcohol. And this is going to increase. I will share a story and I'll probably be brief, but a number of years ago on St. Patrick's Day, we had three underage people driving late at night and they're playing leapfrog, where they speed up, hit forward, speed up, hit forward, speed up, hit forward, and then hit forward, go in and out, and then break in and out. And they were traveling at high speeds. This is just one of so many that I've been on in the last 25 years. They were under the influence. Yes, that's was alcohol. This has the same impairment for young people if they're on it. They see adults do it, they're going to do it. But they were leapfrogging back. One car hit the corner. So there was three young people in a car accident. I remember getting that page at 2 o'clock in the morning, maybe it was 1:30. We ran up there, took both rigs because of the obviously three people. The deputy sheriff page back says, hurry. I do not know how long I can keep this person alive. I do not know how long. And this is just one of many. I got to the scene, and I will spare you the details of what I saw, but I have seen what seriousness that has caused with DWI, and this is going to be under an influence that kids will do. One of those girls was named Brittany. Now, to most of you, that's not a big thing, but my daughter at that time was 5 years old, and her name was Brittany, and she passed away that day, that morning at 7 a.m. Two other people passed away a little later. I've been on accidents with adults that's under the influence of drugs and alcohol. It does not do anything, and I do not see any place that I have heard, I've been sitting here looking into it, that will prevent people from getting this. Whenever you make something easier, more people will be on it, more people will get in car accidents, more people will be hurt, and so forth. And we as a society need to protect people from ills, and this will not decrease the ills of it. And so we are here to protect our kids. And this legalizing marijuana, doesn't matter how you do it, it will get in their hands. It will hurt kids. I will be then on more ambulance runs of people driving under the influence and hurting families. And we do not have to continue to do this. That's why I cannot support this, because it does not do anything to protect kids. And when you make it easier, boom, it's worse. So that's my two cents. And I.
Oh, we lost your sound there.
No, I appreciate, I hit the button there, my mistake. I appreciate the indulgence of everybody's time, and thank you.
All right, thank you. And in the interest of time, Representative Winkler is certainly happy to have you respond if you like. Okay, and we'll have you wrap up certainly at the end. We'll try to zip through some more members here. So I now have Representative Ackland, Robbins, Damuth, Hewitt, and Bolden. Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to just thank especially Jeff Backer for bringing, showing us some of the consequences he's seen from the effects of alcohol and marijuana use. I've been a nurse in the emergency room for 10 years, and I could add to his stories many times over, but I'm not going to go that direction. I actually wanted to kind of pull us back into really, we're in the health committee, and a couple things that I wanted to point out in opposition to this bill is, first of all, I had a letter from a licensed clinical psychologist from U of M, and he was talking about seeing these students in the college age group and the effects that the marijuana has had on them. And he says, I see poor concentration increases each month with use, apathy, use stunts brain growth as seen in fMRIs, brain imaging, depression increases, psychosis increases. And the one thing he pointed out, he says the brain continues to grow and develop until 25 years. So I did a search to see, just a general search on brain development, and every single thing I read said that the brain continues to develop until age 25. And I noticed in the bill that the age for legalization would be 21. That is a major problem for me, because even though that seems like a short time between 21 and 25, how important is that? And also just that a lot of the articles that I was reading talked about, we arbitrarily set an age of adolescence at 18. Maybe we even need to rethink that, because true maturation of your brain, which includes all your social decisions, your reasoning, your decision making, that's still developing until age 25. So that's one thing. And the other thing I wanted to point out, back to the health part, is it's surprising to me we want to legalize something that we know has harmful effects on our lungs. And that's one of the biggest problems with tobacco smoking, is the harmful effect it has on the lungs. So I have here in front of me six articles, and I'm not going to read them. I'm just going to pull out some sentences from them that show that it says in cannabis smokers, there are an increased incidence of respiratory symptoms and episodes of acute bronchitis. A chronic smoker, chronic use provokes a reduction in specific conductance and increase in airways resistance. A lot of these go into some very technical things that I'm not going to bother with here, but they bring about signs of airway inflammation and alter the fungicidal and antibacterial activity of the alveolar. I won't go on. You'll get the idea just if I pull out just a sentence or two. Actually, I've lost my paper here. Too many papers. Oh, here it is. There's the third article I read, there's an association between smoking cannabis and chronic bronchitis. Article 4, bolus, lung disease, barotrauma, and cannabis smoking have been recognized in case reports. Number 5, smoking cannabis was associated with dose-related impairment of large airway functioning, resulting in airflow obstruction and hyperinflation. And number 6, cannabis smoking has increased and is likely to increase further with relaxation of legalization and medicinal use of the cannabinoids. Chronic marijuana smoking often produces symptoms similar to those of chronic tobacco smoking, such as cough, sputum production, shortness of breath, and wheezing. So that said, we know that the immediate use causes more of this inflammatory lung disease. What we don't know is the long-term effects of it. And so because many people are hesitant to talk to researchers about their smoking cannabis, we don't have good data on whether or not smoking cannabis would cause lung cancer. And each article that I read said there just needs to be more research. So I would say it's too soon for us to know the long-term effects. We need more research before we would actually legalize something that actually is not healthy for our human body. And so thank you for listening, and it's been a good discussion. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Ackland. Let me just announce I've got several members on the list. I'm going to not take any more members on the list right now because we do need to get to a vote. We can go a little bit over past our what would be our 3:30 ending time. So we'll do what we need to do here to let members ask questions and to let Representative Winkler have a response. And so next on the list is Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this discussion, members. I have to say I was quite disappointed to hear one of the members say that Plymouth is not the African-American community, and that they were disparaging the testimony of a witness who came here with genuine concern for his community, which I have to say in my district.
It's not.
I'm sorry, I'm speaking, Mr. Thompson, and I just want you to know, I'd love you to come to my district. We have people of all races and all backgrounds in the suburbs, just like you do in the city. And so I received a text from that witness, and he would like the opportunity to respond, Madam Chair. So if he could unmute.
Well, Representative Robbins, go ahead and ask your question. We're not going to be able to take more witness conversation at this point. We're not going to have back and forth between, you know, I mean, this is, we're getting a little, I appreciate his concern We're gonna need to move on. Representative Robbins, did you have a question or a comment?
And we'll move on. I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. But you were going to allow Representative Hess to question a witness. So I find it unfortunate that when he was not available, you would have allowed it, but you won't allow Mr. Hines to speak. And I find that very unfortunate. But my question is
Robbins,
to Mr. Winkler.
This is not a question. This is a back and forth. We just need to move on from this kind of personality. Let's just move on from it. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Representative Winkler. He said that that Mr. Hines' concern that was raised was that this legislation would be targeting low-income and BIPOC communities because it is in fact doing. They're going to promote grants and micro businesses in these communities through a point system that particularly favors those groups. And the concern expressed by the witness was that this will really harm these communities and bring adverse impact to these communities. And Representative Winkler, I believe, stated that no, there's local control, but my reading of the bill, and you can correct me, Representative Winkler, is that cities cannot prohibit the establishment or operation of cannabis businesses. They can regulate operation of hours or location, but they cannot prohibit establishment or operation of these businesses anywhere in the states. There is no local control. Is that correct, Representative Winkler?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins, there are a whole bunch of different concepts mixed up in your question, so I'll just try to state what the bill does. The bill does not permit a local unit of government to prohibit cannabis sales in their local unit of local jurisdiction. It does allow them to use the standard time, place, and manner restrictions that exist for any other kind of business. The reason for that is that in states where local jurisdictions could opt out, they continue to have a significant illegal marketplace. And one of the goals of this bill is to eliminate the illegal marketplace and replace it with a regulated marketplace. So a city could decide based on distribution patterns of and concentrations of business, retail businesses, to limit how many could be in their city, but they couldn't entirely eliminate them. As to the point about who can participate, yes, we do have social equity grants, which would allow people to get a certain number of licenses to operate as manufacturers, cultivators, delivering companies, retail companies, a whole range of companies. Part of that is geographic based, but that doesn't mean that the business is necessarily located in that community. The point is to try to distribute some of the potential economic upside to those communities that were most adversely affected, and that is based on the public hearings that we had across the state requesting that specific kind of policy goal. So obviously there can be differences of opinion on whether somebody should want to be in that business. But the point here is to have a little bit of restoration of past wrongs. That's why we have an extensive expungement provision in the bill. That is why we have grants back to communities that are not related to cannabis businesses. They're just straight up community grants to help those communities spend that money in any way that they want, is to recognize the harm of prohibition has not been fairly distributed.
All right, thank you, Representative Winkler. Next, Representative
Madam
Damon.
I'm sorry, it was Kristen. May I have a follow-up?
No, we were not doing follow-ups, Representative Robbins. Sorry, everybody's doing one question. Representative Damon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Winkler, for bringing this forward. This is the second opportunity that I've been able to hear the bill presentation. I do not support the bill at this time, but I think these conversations are incredibly important for us to have. Hearing from all of the testifiers is important. I did hear from Mr. Bemis, though, that this does cause 9 to 35% of people using cannabis potentially do face issues with addiction. And that was a stat that I think is important for us to consider. A lot of the supportive testimony talked about the medical use of cannabis, which we know already exists. So I will continue to look and to listen and learn on this. But one of the areas that is incredibly important for me is that because we don't have a way to gauge the possible levels of impairment both for driving, also heavy equipment operating, and all of those. That is an area that I think we need to look further to. And then one final comment, Madam Chair, as you recognized earlier, it is important to be careful with the words that we use where we're hearing. I did hear Representative Thompson disrespect the community of Plymouth and one of our testifiers. To Mr. Haynes, our testifier, thank you for being here. You do represent a portion of the African-American community. Your testimony is valuable, and that is all I have to say. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you, Representative Damuth. Let's see, we have, Next is Representative Bolden in terms of first questions. Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be very brief. I don't actually have a question. I just wanted to make a comment. I appreciate, thank you to Representative Winkler for bringing this bill forward. I think it's this is an important conversation to have. And this being the Health Committee, I think I just want to be sure that we are clear in what we are talking about in terms of the health aspects with marijuana. There were some comments made earlier, several times, sort of conflating the effects of alcohol with the effects of marijuana. And so I can say, I worked as a nurse in an ICU for many years, and many times I cared for patients who landed there because of alcohol, but not once ever did I care for a patient in the ICU that landed there solely because of marijuana. And so I think we just need to be really clear about that. And so just wanted to make that comment. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bolden. And I'm sorry, I skipped Representative Hewitt. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here real quick. I just want to go to Representative Backer's point, and he's right. Most of the people that we have in EMS, I've been on it for 30 years in major metropolitan services, and those people, I've never transported anybody for marijuana use. I've transported a lot of alcohol. I am in favor of this bill because I really like to put it in the regulated classification. The hardest part of transporting somebody that might be impaired from marijuana, but we haven't seen it, is not knowing. And you see a bag on the seat, but there's other implications there. You bring the bag with you, but we don't know what's in that bag. And I think this is a step towards regulating it, making sure that if the quality is there, that we know exactly what it is. I also have to speak that I've never had, and EMS deals with airways. That's one of our biggest business. I've never, ever had an airway problem with somebody that smoked marijuana. A lot of airway problems with alcohol, a lot of airway problems with other drugs, but never have seen it related to a THC issue. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. So as members know, we are past our time now. So I think what I'm going to do is go to Representative Winkler to close up. I see that Representative Rasmussen has his hand up, but members, I know that Representative Winkler is very open to taking questions offline. And so I would just ask, if you have further questions, please do reach him. But unfortunately, we're not going to be able to do a second round right now since we are actually over time. And I know it is Saturday afternoon and members probably have other things they'd like to do. So Representative Winkler, closing thoughts before we vote on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I appreciate the conversation and especially bringing four committees together to go over this bill and go over some of the health concerns with it. I know that people are concerned about legalizing cannabis. Both support and concerns are bipartisan. The question I face as a responsible policymaker is, how could we justify the continued use of a policy that harms a lot of people through the criminal justice system, does a very poor job of keeping cannabis out of the hands of kids, does a very poor job of educating people about the actual risks of cannabis, and does nothing to regulate the safety of a product in the marketplace? The proposals to decriminalize or to expand the medical program are fine as far as they go, but they don't actually address the policy failure that our criminal justice system represents with respect to cannabis. This bill represents a lot of considered work and reflects the work of a lot of legislators who are concerned about legalization and seeks to minimize those potential harms. As a result, I think House File 600 represents a very thoughtful approach to a difficult public policy issue and presents the best opportunity for Minnesota to address a concern that many Minnesotans have and to redress some of the many harms that our current prohibition model has visited upon communities in Minnesota. So, Madam Chair, and members of the committees, I do appreciate your time and I ask for your support today.
All right. Thank you, Representative Winkler. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 600, the sixth engrossment, be re-referred to the Tax Committee. The clerk will take the roll. Chair votes aye.
Chair Liebling, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt.
Aye.
Hewitt, aye. Lead Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, no.
Ackland, no. Representative Backer.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Representative Bonner.
Bonner, aye.
Bonner, aye. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Damoth.
Damoth, no.
Damoth, no. Representative Freiberg.
Freiberg, yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Grunhagen.
Grunhagen, no.
Grunhagen, no. Representative Keel.
Keel, no.
Keel, no. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Munson.
Munson, no.
Munson, no. Representative Pryor.
Pryor, aye.
Pryor, aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam, no. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. Representative Schultz.
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, aye.
11 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the Tax Committee.
Madam Chair.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name wasn't called. I would like to say aye.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Ms. Niedernhofer, is it still 11? Does that change the count?
It's only our committee that's voting?
Yes. Oh, Representative Sandell, you're not on our committee. There we go. That's okay. That did throw me because I'm used to the number that we got. So thank you. All right. Well, members, thank you very much for the robust discussion. Thank you to all the testifiers. Thank you very much to our staff who really collaborated to come and make this a very large committee hearing happen today. We really appreciate the help and the extra help. And very much we appreciate Representative Winkler for all his hard work and coming and answering all the questions today. And with that, we stand adjourned.